man Whipper will call, and even at night I hurry to my blue heaven. You turn to the right, you find a little bright light that leads you to my blue heaven. You find a cozy place, my place, cozy room. On a nest, that nest is where the rose is blue. Just Molly and me, and a baby makes free. Be happy in my blue heaven.
And welcome to your blue heaven once again. Welcome to the Naked or Knackered Football Show. And my guest today is my neighbour, actually, Mr. Stephen Skeet. How are you, Stephen?
I'm fine, thank you, Graham. Hello, everyone.
Stephen, actually, you have... we'll go straight in. Shall we go straight into Saturday's game? Because I think otherwise, if we
get
didn't,
out of the way.
If we didn't. Well, I was going to ask, how did your... Because your kids go to football, don't they?
Yeah.
How did they cope with that? Or what on earth did they think of that?
Well, my... My two kids do come to football soon to get older than me, but also had a tourist with us in the form of my wife.
Oh, really?
And so it was a spectrum of, on the one hand, my children irrationally not being able to deal with the fact that they've watched this team score 100 goals and get 100 points for the last year. Me as the withered old sage in the middle, I've seen all this before, for 45 years. And my wife just saying, this is a great day out, isn't it? Aren't they doing well? Yeah, we're in the blue, is that kind of scenario. So,
has she been before?
Yeah, she used to come along, but back in the,
before you had kids and things.
Yeah. Darren Benton, she was still singing Big Fat Joe's Barmy Army as she walked into Portland Road. So we used to go a lot of away games and stuff, but been a while since she came. So, yeah, look, I mean, I guess the thing for me was that kind of just sort of saying to the kids as we were going through the game, it's all right to kind of hold a few different kind of positions on this. Like, on the one hand, it is on paper a disgrace that we've lost this, this game. But also, this is why sport and football is fantastic. And, you have to love the fact that basically posties and cleaners are still able to rock up and win a game of football in a... Yeah. environment like that, and if that wasn't the case, then we'd be all the poorer for it. So there was that kind of pragmatic thing with my kids to say, no, it's because of this that you celebrated the last minute equaliser against Leicester and were crying on Monday night with pride. That's the context in which all this sits. So basically, it was a 90 minutes parenting intervention during the game.
Unbelievable. I can't imagine any other game. I can't remember ever any other game with any other team where the, 48 shots to their two.
It was extraordinary, yeah.
And 11 corners to nil, and incredible.
And the at halftime, I was sort of thinking about looking at their first goal, and obviously, if you take all the defending and we just lost the plot and shape and all the rest of it, to see a team kind of defend their corner from that level of football and not just sort of sit on the laurels and expect the ball to come back in, but actually charge out, pick up the ball, play this diagonal pass, go for the middle. Guy's first touch.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Superb, wasn't it?
People talk about the finish, rightly. Yeah. But he's touched the ball twice from the halfway line and they've scored. For all those moving parts to come together, you'd expect a really well-drilled, high-level professional football team to be able to do that. So I was thinking in the context of that, it was incredible to even have pulled off that goal at that stage, because they'd, been pummeled, hadn't they, sort of first 20 minutes. Fair play. It was a good life lesson, is the pragmatic way of putting it, notwithstanding the fact that on paper I was quite happy to say it was also a disgrace.
It was.
To have lost the game.
Having said that, I saw a few moans on social media about, that's the worst I've ever felt as an Ipswich fan. It's the worst they've ever performed. And I thought, going back to, say, Lincoln, before they were in the league even, under McCarthy, away, I went to that game on a miserable Tuesday night or whatever, and that was far worse, because we were awful. I mean, you can't say we played awfully badly on Saturday.
There were so many moments in the last 20 years alone, particularly in the last 12 years, I suppose, under that last ownership, where I just continually, week after week after week, felt worse than what I felt on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's without, it was at Old Trafford when we lost 9-0, and, games like that. It was at Peterborough when we lost by 7.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was at those games, they were lower, you know, under Keane, or Jewel out, and it's Jewel one out, of the was 7-1 Jewel out, Peterborough away 7-1 I mean,
yeah, I remember that.
Okay, on paper we've lost. That's a far worse result on paper, but actually, you know, it comes off the back of a hunt. You put our greatest calendar year in, you know, results wise in history. Oh, so no, you know, a new ownership and what have you. So I just didn't have that sentiment at all, as ridiculous as the result was.
Mm.
Yeah, I've spent much of the last 12 years feeling fundamentally far worse than that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've touch wood, we're out of that malaise.
Mm.
My niece, I think I told you this before, my niece, she's still quite young, early 20s, and all she's seen is like Jewel out and McCarthy and what's his name, Lambert, and you know, she's hooked on football. But you'd think, how on earth could you get hooked watching that? But
well, it's interesting. Nelly, my daughter's 15, and I think it was about 8 years before she saw us win. Something ridiculous.
Yeah, so she's in the same.
Whereas
camp,
Ollie, who's you know 10 or 11, he's thinking this is great. This, you know, just turn up and batter everyone every week. You know, sort of scenario. So there's been a bit of me saying to them, you know, in my 40-45 years, I've had about 3 years of this joy, and everything else has been pretty much misery. So. You know, take it in context.
You have to, don't you? I suppose the next step is for McCarthy, goodness gracious, the ghosts in my head. Kieran McKenna leaves one day, and then it all goes down the pan again.
I did read about McCarthy sort of meeting with Ella Kobe and helping them out on their cup run, and I did make a couple of references to that to say that about their performance kind of had McCarthy all over it, really. It was a particularly second half, where I actually thought some of the, you know, first half, they obviously massively rode the luck. Second half, I mean, it wasn't just the shot. I mean, the amount of defensive headers they got away, you know, really high quality defensive headers. They, you know, they put it, they were getting in the way. They had McCarthy kind of written all over it, really.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, McCarthy, when he was here, his hands were tied, weren't they, financially? And you know, I know the players that the odd one you bump into, they all spoke very highly of him, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, he got a lot of stick, which I think was unfair. I think it should have been the owner got the stick. Anyway, should we look at tweets and emails and thingies as they came in, as per usual, if I can find them? Right. Chris Rand. Ah, he's our Cambridge stat man.
Oh,
do you know Chris?
We've gone straight to the top, haven't we, in
terms
of...
We have. We actually, everything's... Yeah, I daren't say everything's downhill after that, otherwise no one to tweet in.
Where's Slower coming in?
Yeah, Oxlower comes at the end.
Oh, okay.
He always leaves his late. He tries to. Yeah, he wants to be the headline act. Chris Rand, around the club has been over the last few days. Can the staff use what happened to spur us on, or does it not matter because we just take each match as it comes? I think he's quoting Mr. McKenna there.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
My thought is that Saturday is absolutely fine in the context of how McKenna addresses this, as all of these things being learning events, really. So obviously the each game that it comes is a cliche, but the bit underneath that really is that, you know, each one of these kinds of moments and events, you just know he's absolutely banking the learning out of it, passing it on, discarding all the stuff that's not important and kind of moving on.
Yeah.
It's probably the first time I think he'll have a lot of rage and a bit of emotion in there about maybe how he delivers that, and I think it'll be good to refocus the team around some of that. But for me, it's just been consistent from him all the way through. And I think we forget, as fans, he's experiencing these things for the first time as well. It's not just the players, right? So, you know, that's kind of helpful for the group, I think, because he's doing his own reflection as he's going, isn't he? And then getting them back. So, you know, to me, scoring a last-minute equaliser at Monday... Leicester away, having got through that first half, come out and play the second half, was a massive learning and event, and then losing to a team 90 odd places below you is a massive learning event. And I just think that's the, irrespective of the kind of each game that comes, that's just how he treats that, I think. It's another thing that we've been through together. Let's unpick it. What do we discard? What do we take? How do we move on? You know, but ultimately the trajectory is just going to stay the same, I think.
Do you think that adding one, maybe even two strikers by then might change the mood as well a bit?
Yeah, G
everyone up a bit.
I do think it's a bit simplistic to talk about strikers in the context of Saturday's game.
Yeah,
the way we were playing, I don't think it mattered who we were going to pop there.
No,
wasn't going to change anything. Yeah, the striker thing is, I think it is, and the striker thing I really like because, you know, I see this a lot on social media, people still go on about goals and goals and goals. At some point, work out that that's not the main consideration of that striker profile for us. And it hasn't. We scored 100 goals last year without not being the main consideration.
And Hurst isn't known as a goal scorer.
No, absolutely. And it doesn't matter. You know, we scored 100 goals as a team because of what that player does for us as a as a whole. And so, and what enables other people to do. So it's far better for me that we found the right person with the right profile to do that. And so if we've got that person in, I think the players will key into that and I'll give them a big lift.
Yeah.
As opposed to us saying, here's a 20-goal-a-season striker. We've just, you know, I think the players have been kind of made to be a bit more intelligent than that, McKenna, I think.
Slightly off track, but still talking about team selection, what would you make of, I mean, Morsi's going to be back on Saturday, isn't he? Who's going to sit in there in the midfield as a couple?
I think he'll go back to Luongo and, and Morsi. I actually, Taylor was one of the players I was really disappointed with on Saturday.
Oh, yes, I was,
I think he's the future.
Yeah.
And I think when he kind of turns the other, he's obviously got a great shot and a great range of passing, but I'm really impressed with him when he turns the other team round and he drives through the middle. His final ball and his execution and decision making is the bit that still looks really rough and ready to me. If he can get that in his game, then he'll be a player, but that just wasn't on in sync at all
on
Saturday. So, and obviously Brody, I think, has been a bit off it too. So for me, you go back to Luongo and Morsi.
Travis, though, that's my point.
Yeah, I don't think Travis will play.
You don't?
No. I think Morsi will come back fresh. Luongo didn't play Saturday. I thought at Leicester, actually, Travis was a bit iffy in the first half, came into it much stronger in the second half. I think we underestimate just how difficult it is to come into the team as a new player because it's so highly tuned and in sync and movement and what have you that you would play in teams that you've played the rest of your career and it looks like a really bad pass. But in every other team that'd have been a good pass, we don't really play that same way. So, yeah, I would see those two coming in and probably Travis to freshen up, you know, 60, 65, 70 minutes would be my view.
Thank you for that, Chris. Mick Lumley, he'd just like to say something about Saturday, but what would be the point, he says. What's done is done. I've given you a little tune instead. And his tune, I can't play it because we're on a... It's difficult. Lovely day to the Al-Hamadi.
Oh, is that the
name? Al-Hamadi. Al-Hamadi. That one.
Well, that'll be interesting in the acoustics of Portman Road. We can't manage Blue Army and sing for more than 20, you know, 20 seconds.
I know. But it's not a bad idea, actually. No. But as Steve said, if you can get the whole stadium to do it,
I think my record this season. I think my record this season is counting six different pockets of songs because you sit on the sides. So you kind of see each of these little pockets going. Anyway, that's another gripe.
It is. Yeah, we need what's his name in the middle, don't we, with the drum?
Yeah, those are the days.
Cheers, Mick. Dean Mitchell. Hello, mate. Saturday was a fluke, similar to Lincoln last season. What annoyed me the most was the poor referee. If we moan about this, it seems like we're bad losers and spoils the narrative around Maidstone's big day. But that was a foul for the second goal, and I heard the contact on Fridge myself. Yeah, I mean, they were both fouls, but I mean...
Yeah, but
I think we should still have beaten them.
And
I agree with you there.
And at whatever level of football you've played, if you've been in dressing rooms where you know you're going in as a massive underdog, you know you need a bit of luck. You need the other team to be off it. Yeah. You need to play at your best, and you probably need the ref to give you some decisions.
Yeah,
you know. And so you just got to be pragmatic and stick it into. You know,
I like the refs. I don't know where I saw it or heard it. The ref's excuse for not giving the penalty to Fritsch. He said, when asked, he said, well, look at him, he didn't appeal very strongly, you can tell he was diving or something. Well, that's not a reason to not give it, just because he doesn't appeal. He did a bit, he just put an arm up, didn't he? But
I do wonder if it's a bit of a funny one, but we don't have to deal with VAR at our level, but particularly these
that would have been given both of
yeah
both
and you do
those,
wonder whether some of the refs are more
lenient,
more happy just to kind of do that on the basis that, you know, stuff will be pulled back and checked, and there's a foul safe there, isn't there? Now, you know, I know in cricket DRS fundamentally changed. Slower will love this. Fundamentally, had to change the way batsmen had to play spin because suddenly there was all these LBWs that were given that it hadn't been given for the previous 100 years. because of the convention of the rules sort of went out of the window, really. So
no, you're going to lose me there, Steve.
Yeah, sorry. This is a, no, this is a football. This is a football chat.
No, no, it's not.
But
that.
I think it does change your psychology.
I did know what LBW was in 1804. I don't know what it means now. Because if it is, are they taking into account where the spin will go rather than where it is actually hits the bat?
Yeah, well, there was a convention that if you used to get quite a fair way away from the stumps and the ball hit you, there was too much prediction for the umpire to do it. But now, of course, it's done by computer, so
it's showing
all these people that got the benefit of the doubt now don't have any doubt to get the benefit of it. Just tells them it's going to hit the stump. So
that's what we need, though. We want the day when VAR actually works as a computer, like the lines in tennis and things. You know, where you've got goal line technology that works pretty well, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's too many variables in football for it.
And the angle of the line. Right, thank you for that, Dino. Bono. Hello, Bono. Good evening, GB, and esteemed guest. Go that far. What is the one thing you miss about playing in League One? Up a town, he says. There you go. What's the one thing you miss? I suppose getting tickets easier. There's one thing, to go through away games.
Yeah, I miss... that's a really good question. I guess I'm missing, in the last year, I've missed probably the last few months pumping everyone easy because teams have adapted. I agree with you. I think that's that, and we've talked about memberships and all that business at length in the past, haven't we? But there is a byproduct as you go up the pyramid, you become more successful. You know, there's a level of kind of quote-unquote professionalism or commercialism or whatever that creeps in that becomes a byproduct of being a team operating at a certain level, you know. And you and I have given thousands of tickets away before to the local community. The days of League One, everyone come, let's get behind the boys sort of thing is kind of moved into you need to pay extra for a membership and scrabble, you know, and what have you. So that's probably the trajectory for the future, actually, isn't it, if we keep going the way we're going.
Yeah.
But I do miss a bit of that big club in League One kind of naivety that, you know, that we had and is lost kind of now.
I don't necessarily miss the referees, but I do miss a lot of it. And no, I like to go to the old grounds.
All
up
the
at
low
Morgan.
Blocks and associated Fleetwood goalkeeper down, time wasting Fleetwood, with cramp after 2 minutes.
Miss the old times were good, weren't they? No. Thanks for that, Bono. Rob Anderson, dear GB and Steve, what were your emotional responses as the game unfolded on Saturday? And what are your reflections now for the impact of the result on the rest of the season? Love the show. Best, Rob. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to negatively impact the season. I think there's a chance it might positively impact the season, actually, for a few reasons. But I don't think it'll be negative. I mean, you just have to park your embarrassment, don't you?
I think it does
look
press.
At the context of where we are.
I mean, everyone seems really important, but I think in this instance it possibly is a bit more important. Mm. It's Preston, so they are beatable, but it is after that defeat, and it will be interesting to see how they do adapt and whether they can get it out of their system or whether Mr. McKenna. We're going to have to stop hiring managers with Mac in front of their name. Right, here we go. This is from Tim. This is the Vulture, of course.
Oh, the Vulture.
The Vulture. Regarding the traumatic events of Saturday, I think I'm turning into Roy Keane since I've come off the pills. I started out being deeply philosophical on Saturday, but ended up really annoyed on Sunday. You're a professional footballer's town. What are you doing losing to a non-league side at home? Sure, everything went their way, but still, it's embarrassing. However, it's the first misstep of the Kieran era, so perhaps all will be forgiven if we end up promoted come May. Well, that's certainly correct. Thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, look, I probably went the other way to Vulch, actually.
Yeah.
I was probably a bit miffed about it for about an hour, and then gradually got more and more philosophical, really. I just think if you're McKenna, the Leicester away performance 5 days earlier is much more important.
Absolutely.
You know, and to kind of show that level of, character and ability, and actually just like the Leicester home game, if the game had gone on for another 10 minutes, I could have seen us winning that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a young lad scoring a goal in that context. You know, for me, that's the important thing that happened that week. And so I think we'll be looking back at this in May and just thinking, actually, it was a bit embarrassing, but it's quite funny now to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a wider bit which links to the membership thing, which is there's 27,500 there. And they are the only games that those people can get tickets to.
Yes.
Often. And same with Fulham.
Yeah.
And, there was a young lad who sat in front of us who couldn't get a ticket all season. It was the first game. So I feel for those fans.
Yeah.
Because they haven't had the 100, experienced the 100 goals, 100 games kind of stuff, 100 points kind of stuff that we've been experiencing. Yeah. But, so if that's one of your two or three games a season, I feel for those. But I think, you know, the game on Monday night at Leicester was the game for me, and far more important, really.
Definitely. What did you make of the incident in the Maidstone game?
Go on, give me the incident.
Well, the guy that fell off.
Oh, yeah, of course, down, yeah.
Which looked very staged. It looked like he was planning it.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, yeah, the incident is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We've sat in that, been around that stand, I've sat in that stand. You can't just.
You can't fall. Do that, no. You have to fall upwards otherwise, wouldn't you?
You know. See, even someone incredibly inebriated,
yeah,
he's unlikely to fall like that.
I'm sure he was, but he's
the whole thing is necessarily a plan, but certainly an intentional act.
Yeah.
As for a sort of right into the paper that can't be named and all that business, I mean, that's almost as bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
Don't get me wrong, people might have legitimate issues or whatever, but take it up with the. With the club, and have adult conversation about it.
And thoughts on going back to Leicester. We've talked about this on the show before. Signing Sarmiento, I thought that's like, is that really a bit unnecessary when you've already got Hutchinson? But when they came on against Leicester, I thought they were really, really good. Thoughts there?
Yeah, there's a thing. I said at half time, I was far more disappointed with our first half against Leicester than I was at that Maidstone game.
Same here.
And so it didn't look like we'd really learnt the lessons from Leeds, or if we had, we hadn't put them in. And there was still that element of me, okay, this is another time we've rocked up to a big ground, big team, you know, we're lucky to be on the same pitch as actually a lot of the players, but it still doesn't take away kind of that running and humility and all that sort of stuff that we talk about. Just didn't think we laid a glove on them, really. So at half time I was saying, actually, we're going to play like this, because we actually drew them right in, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we had an out ball to Jackson and Burns, but we never hit it over the top to turn them around. We then tried to play through the middle.
Yeah.
So I was sort of saying to a few guys, if we're going to keep playing like that, we just need to bring Hutchinson and Sarmiento on, because they're the only two people who can take the ball and good enough to take the ball against a team like this in that context, and are brave enough and are raw enough to not worry about it. And of course, that's kind of what happened, really, notwithstanding the team also, you know, went back to type and really got their sleeves rolled up and sort of went for it. So I think he's a good player, and I can see him playing in the Broadhead role. You know, and alternating that role with Broadhead in that left pocket, really.
Broadhead does seem to struggle at that centre forward.
You know,
he's struggled a bit all season, hasn't he?
Yeah, there's something weird with Broadhead. For me, we used to call him assassin last year. Like, he would be in and out of games, but he would just pop up and do
something clever.
And it would be obviously his goals, but also a through ball or a pass, and you wouldn't know there's no backlift. You wouldn't know who's going to do it or whatever. And now it's the opposite. So he's getting on the ball a lot, but he seems reluctant to have a shot.
He seems to be trying too hard,
like scoring the perfect goal and trying to fight, so it's definitely a mentality thing. I don't know what it is, obviously we're not very close to it, but there's definitely been a shift there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Slower ball, good evening Jeebus, good evening Skeet Petite.
Oh dear. Yeah.
We'll have an award ceremony for your opening lines at the end of the season, slower ball. GB, no doubt you'll be pleased as Suffolk Punch. Oh, see, pleased as Punch that we have been dumped out of the FA Cup by non-league opposition. Shocker. Yeah, I'm not too disappointed, to be fair. So, we have a striker. Let's hope Alhamadi. Does it work? Lovely day, Alhamadi.
I'm not sure we're going to lay down a rhythm track to make it work.
Hope he can rack up the goals.
Oh, very good.
Question for the panel. We're nearly finished as well. With news of our interest in German under-21 player, I can't pronounce that, from Eintracht Frankfurt, should fans like a German vegetarian fear the worst or the worst? Dear me. Good day to you. Keep smiling. God bless Moritz Volz. God. Final word, Steve. Only got 30 seconds. leave it with you.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, I actually think there was a big piece here for this transfer window in terms of we're second in the league, but the squad and the money and whatever is the bottom end, right?
Exactly.
So what do we do here? And I'm just pleased they've gone to type, going for younger players with a sell-on value that they can mould, and they haven't lost the plot and just spanked loads of money on, you know, just because they're second.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Steve. Thanks for listening, everyone, and for your emails, tweets. Till next week, take care. Bye-bye.